Chapter 12. Magpie Mansion was aptly named due to its striking steel-gray bricks, tar-black shingled roof, and the bright white painted trim around its stunning bay windows and Gothic church-style entryways. Curiously, the building was actually two separate Victorian-style Tudors that combined forces via a shared outdoor courtyard over where the property line used to lie between 285 and 290 Edmund Place. It was located in historic Brush Park, smack between downtown and midtown, in what was considered the Woodward East District. This parcel of the nearly 8.5 acres that encompassed the entire city block consisted of Alfred, Edmund, and Watson streets. And back in the 1860s, it featured 400 buildings and about 70 Victorian mansions where all the big Detroit names used to live back then. In the district's heyday, it was coined Little Paris because of how European and chic it was. But by 1960, the city's population exploded, and when everyone relocated further up and out, it left Brush Park mostly abandoned. Over the decades, there had been many restoration projects brought to the area, which made it a thriving place for culture and tourism. But that was back in my universe, and now only about a handful of the magnificent structures were left standing in the center of sterile concrete corporate buildings, like some sort of time-begotten oasis. The dusty lot across the street where I parked the Model T looked like it always did, an amalgamation of half-built A-frames, rusty scaffolding, and silent construction machinery that was abandoned for whenever the Illich Group got around to actually making the future residential neighborhood livable, which meant never. However, instead of a useless fenced-off area storing 2x4s and pallets of plywood, every inch of this lot was being used for some sort of purpose, whether it be for the veggie gardens with their little tent-like greenhouses, or a salvage and scrap parts yard filled with metal bits and bobs, or what even appeared to be an organized recycling and waste center. There were also a lot of really awesome alternative indie and pop art sculptures fashioned out of found or recycled materials. Not to mention repurposed shipping containers covered in Warhol meets Banksy-esque graffiti murals, and quite a few spray-painted repetitions of the iconic Circle A that represented anarchism. "Well, gang, shall we wiggle on, like Emma says?" I said, and then I made sure to toss a Crasis a wink over my shoulder, and she startled a little as if put on the spot by a human lessons pop quiz.
"Yes,"
the burgundy-haired spore girl said, and then opened and closed one eye very deliberately. Then she fastened both of those shifting jeweled eyes on me.
"Based on what you explained earlier, a winking is typical when one wants to indicate a joke, secret, or some sign of affection. Did I understand the subtext and apply the gesture correctly?"
"Heyo," I hollered. "You did it, Razzie. You mastered the wink. If we were at a bar, there would be winks all around. Am I right?" Emma snorted like a cute little piglet and dissolved into another bout of snickering.
"I do not understand 59% of what you just said, Dave Meyer,"
Acrasis said, as her delicate eyebrows furrowed adorably. The pout on her face was the perfect combination of Emma's irritated glare and the slight downturn of Fila's lips, but the little nose scrunch was all hers. Damn, I loved my girlfriends, and for a second I completely forgot about the cyberpunk dystopia we'd landed in. "That's okay, babe. We'll cover puns in Lesson 2 on humaning." I grinned at her when the tiniest of smiles lifted the corners of her frowny peach mouth. And I couldn't help my near leap over the seat back so I could try to erase the semi-confused expression she still wore by kissing that frown away as best as I could. God, I was so relieved we made it here without running out of money.
"You two are sweeter than a basket of electric kittens curled up on a Tesla coil,"
Emma said to the both of us after we stopped kissing. She had the biggest blushing grin on her heart-shaped face, and she rested her chin in the cup of her small hand as her laughing blue eyes tracked between Acrasis and me.
"Whatever shall I do with you?"
"Maybe you should join us, Emma Newbold," I said, and then glanced at Acrasis from under my left arm. "What do you say, Raz? There's plenty of room."
"Yes, Emma. There is ample space if you choose to sit with us,"
Acrasis said with a solemn nod.
That is too kind of you. But there are a few people leaving that big fancy house, and it looks like they're coming toward us.
The dark-haired woman said as she pointed through Lizzie's back window. I craned my head back and watched upside down as the motley crew of what appeared to be punk rockers similarly dressed to the members of Motley Crue jogged down Magpie Mansion's brick front steps. Okay, before we go make friends, let's establish some quick ground rules, I said, as I gathered the Namshub goggles off my face and stashed them under the seat. Sol implied the magpies are off-the-grid types, or Sol speak for super paranoid. So just in case, let's keep the details of our particular situation to a minimum. We're just here to see if these nice folks want to trade some vintage hipster swag. No Westinghousing and no slime molding for now, got it?
Yes, my love.
Emma said at the same time as a Crasis melted the pseudo-goggles she and Emma were wearing back into her slime hand. Then a Crasis gave me a nod and an...
Understood, Dave.
Splendid. Let's go. I clapped my hands together once, and then we all piled out of the Model T just as the alternate universe Motley Crue approached us. All four of them had that awful 80s glam punk hair, kind of like if a mullet had long sideburns, and each of them was sporting patchwork leather jackets, a pair of Doc Martens, and were positively covered in tattoos. "Greetings and salutations," said the main punk, spearheading the pack. He had a battered, cropped biker's jacket that had seen better days over a funky purple T-shirt with geometric shapes, and that combined with the dark eyeliner rimming his eyes made him look a little like Richard Hell from Voidoids. "Who are you, and who is this lovely piece of steel?" Before I could answer, Richard Hell, the sequel, placed his fingerless, gloved hands down on the hood of the Model T and stroked its sides as if it was a majestic thoroughbred instead of a janky, too-old Ford that ran on rubbing alcohol.
"Don't mind gear rat,"
said the one and only blonde punk that I was going to now call Dr. Feelgood in my head until I knew his actual name.
"It's rare that we see any car models that are 20th century made, let alone something like that. Rat gets a little excited, don't you, buddy?"
"Let me have this,"
Gear Rat mumbled as he laid his cheek on the Model T's hood and closed his eyes.
"Okay, well, I'm Dave, and this is Emma and Raz, and you guys got a really kick-ass place here," I said, and extended my hand to Dr. Feelgood for a solid shake.
"I also heard through the grapevine that you guys might be up for a trade and a tour. You guys look like you know a thing or two about self-sustainability."
"You into the simple life, man? Living free-range and corp-free,"
one of the other dark-haired dudes said, and pulled out a hand-rolled joint from his glam-do, lit it up with a Zippo, and took a drag.
"What a hit!"
Before I could intercept, the doobie was passed on to Emma, and she inhaled a big drag, like a champ. "Oh, shit," I said, just as Em spluttered and coughed out the pungent, skunky aroma.
"Rock on, little lady,"
the burnout hippie punk said, in a voice that sounded like Jeff Bridges' Lebowski as his eyes wrinkled up at the corners. I placed my hand on Emma's shoulder as she continued to hack and wheeze.
"Heavens,"
she said through her watering eyes.
That is mighty different from Grandfather Day's tobacco."
"That wasn't tobacco," I said as I held Emma's hand when she turned as green as a lime. I remember the choking nausea the first time I took a huge bong rip, thinking I was some bona fide badass, when instead I puked out my chili burger all over my buddy Aaron. Ah, the good old college freshman days. "Do you feel like you might hurl?" I asked her, as she took a few large gulping swallows while she continued to squeeze my fingers. A Crasis came over and held Emma's other hand with a small concerned frown on her oval face.
"Here, man, take a swig of this."
The last member of the AU Motley Crue, who had yet to speak, held out a shiny flask and flipped open the top, which was, of course, in the shape of a skull.
"I'll take that, thank you," I said, and intercepted the flask before Emma could get even more of a schnicket, as Saul would say.
I sniffed the flask, and the overpowering alcohol smell nearly made my nose hairs curl, and I figured there was a good chance it could fuel Lizzie's tank enough to fly us to fucking Mars. I had a feeling if I tried any, I would probably be knocked flat on my ass, so I flicked the flask full of high-octane moonshine, closed, and handed it back to the man in the Grateful Dead shirt.
"We'll pass, but thanks for the hospitality. How you feeling, Ems?"
I'm feeling...
She started, and then she vomited spectacularly on the dusty ground, which caused our new friends to cheer and high-five each other like frat bros.
Oh, honey,
I said, and rubbed her back as I tucked one of her flyaway slinky curls back behind her ear.
Well, you'll feel a lot better soon.
Really?
Emma said with her glistening blue eyes that still continued to stream.
I feel as if I just had my gully stripped and waxed.
I'm not actually sure what that means, I said with a bit of a besotted smile, I will admit. It was so adorable when some of that southern brass came out in her, and I couldn't help but kiss her still pale cheek. I promise you'll feel better soon, way better. Hey, do you guys have any water for my girlfriend?
Yeah, man, Dr. Feelgood said. You guys gotta meet Riggs and his wife. They'll give you the royal treatment. Come on, Rat.
The Richard Hell sequel popped up from where he was on the ground, checking out Lizzie's chassis.
But it's a...
Rat started.
You can check it out later, man, but don't be a shitty host,
Grateful Dead Flask Guy said, and took a swallow of his straight-up kerosene as if it were water. If you want, you can check her out, I told Rat, and gestured to the Model T's hood. He waffled for a moment as he caressed Lizzie's side body, but then he pulled his hand away and shoved his itchy fingers into the pocket of his patchwork denims.
Nah, man. Kennedy is right. I don't want to be rude. Come, friends.
What are all of your names?
Emma asked in a bit of a dreamy voice as we followed Rat and the AU Motley crew toward Magpie Mansion.
Well, I'm Rat, as you know, and this is Kennedy, Scoob, and Hyde, he said, and gestured to Flask Guy, Joint Guy, and Dr. Feelgood, respectively.
I'm Emma Louise Newbold, but you can all call me Emma, and this is my Dave and my Razzie.
She giggled and she lifted first my hand and then Acrasis's. She looked so pleased with herself I didn't have the heart to remind her that I'd already introduced us.
You all look so colorful with those pictures on your skin. Dave, can I get some pictures on my skin?
Maybe later, Emma Louise, I said, just so I could say her newly revealed middle name. Let's get you some water first.
Oh, yes, I do like water,
Emma confirmed, as if she forgot.
Most of our crew are out back switching out the bottle towers and harvesting some of our strawberries, if you guys want to check it out,
Rat said, as he led us all to the large wooden door to the mansion.
You have strawberries?
Emma gasped, and the heels of her old-timey shoes click-clacked on the brick front stoop as she gave a little happy dance. Apparently, Scooby's doobie was agreeing with her, and I felt a small knot of tension uncoil from my gut. I was worried for a second her being from another universe on top of her underexposure to such things would cause her to have a bad reaction. But instead, I got an arm full of punchy, very affectionate Emma as she pulled my head down so she could stage whisper into my ear.
I've only ever tasted strawberries once. They are divine, Dave. Just you wait.
She purred, and I decided not to tell her that I already knew what strawberries tasted like so she could have her fun.
We would definitely love to see how you guys set up something like a bottle tower, I said to Rat as he finished unlocking the double-locked door, even though he only went across the street.
It was a little paranoid, but I decided not to comment, and I just tucked that observation away for later. We always like improving our DIY skills, don't we, ladies?
Huh? What?
Emma said, while Acrasis gave one of her weird doll winks.
Oh boy,
I said under my breath. So far, we weren't really flying under the radar as far as the whole let's not be weird thing. Luckily, none of the AU Motley crew seemed to notice or care, and we all walked into a place that looked like a weird hipster Dracula lived there. If the outside of Magpie Mansion looked a bit like Monster House with its steel gray paint, wrought iron fence and front yard full of rusty swing sets and home appliances, then the inside looked like what I thought of when I imagined a real-life Howl's Moving Castle. Right when we walked in, the first thing that grabbed my attention was how the ceilings were quite high, but because of the many things hanging from it, like beaded chandeliers made from recycled Mardi Gras necklaces, handmade box kites of all sizes with papier-mâché sails, Moroccan lanterns, and even a small canoe, it almost felt like I needed to stoop to walk around. Honestly, it was like every bit of culture this sterile corporate Detroit was missing was all crammed inside this one place.
Even the walls had the pleasantly claustrophobic feeling to them, as kitschy tchotchke things covered every inch like some family-friendly themed restaurant. Old license plates, cuckoo clocks, cracked mirrors, movie posters, and pilfered street signs cluttered the damask fleur-de-lis wallpaper. And because the mansion appeared to be an open floor plan, several standing shoji screens and found material partitions were arranged so people could section off areas around lumpy furniture or piles of Persian rugs and pillows for privacy. Rat led us back toward the right corner to a large kitchen with dried and fresh herbs hanging from the ceiling, and then he cut through a dining room where a massive 20-person table sat. "I couldn't help but notice your kitchen sink was covered up and being used as more counter space," I said, as Rat led us to a pair of French double doors at the end of the dining room. "Do you guys have running water?"
"The other house does, but that's mostly so we can keep our servers cool," Rat said, when we entered the shared courtyard-slash-garden area connecting the two properties. "Our drinking water comes from our handmade solar cisterns. Come on, I'll show you."
Rat then took us through another set of double doors and out to the back of the property where about a dozen or so punks of all shapes and sizes were milling around and helping out in a frenzy of productivity.
"Wow, this place has changed," I muttered as I looked around what used to be the open-air stage where people would go to see live music and drink beer.
Instead, it was a large mashup of garden plots, growing vertical towers of all kinds of vegetables, interspersed between worksheds with DIY projects in various stages of completion. But by far the biggest difference were the stacked shipping containers where the stage used to be, with the neon word "pantry" spray-painted in stylized graffiti on the side.
"Here,"
Rat said, as he led us to where a square plastic sheet was laid on the ground, anchored by five rocks, four of which held the sheet in place at each corner, with one in the middle like the number five side of a die. Rat then knelt on the ground next to the sheet as we all watched.
"This is a solar still. We dig a hole in the ground about 4 feet, put in some kind of container, those 5-gallon paint buckets work the best, and then we put in some vegetation like weeds or grass, no, not that grass, Scoob, before we cover the pit with the plastic. The sun's heat will naturally try to evaporate the moisture in the ground as well as the water from the veg, but it'll get trapped against the plastic. We put a stone in the middle of the plastic so that it will sag and cause a cone that the condensed water can drip off, kind of like a stalactite in a cave."
"Oh, I see," I said, as I peered down at the bucket through the semi-transparent plastic. "Then the water drips off of the cone, the bucket collects the distilled water, and presto changeo, filtered drinking water. Neat."
"You are correct, my good man,"
the punk named Kennedy said, and once again offered me his flask.
What the hell?
I shrugged as I took the tarnished silver item and then flicked open the skull cap so I could take a swig. Even though I only took a small mouthful, it felt like it was enough to strip the enamel off my freaking teeth, and I swore on my Ninja Turtles underwear I heard the sound of my liver sobbing.
Thanks,
I said and handed it back. How long does it take to fill a 5-gallon bucket?
The cistern distills 0.8 liters every 2 hours, so a full 48 hours of sunlight is right on the money, especially in the summertime.
Rat then removed the rocks and folded back the plastic sheet before the punk named Scoob tossed him a plastic cup he must have acquired when he passed through the kitchen. Rat caught the cup and then scooped a cupful out of the bucket nearly brimming with crystal clear water. Then he got to his feet and handed the cup to Emma.
"Drink that, doll."
Emma clasped the cup with both hands and took a tentative sip. Then her eyes fluttered shut as she began to guzzle the water as if she was a woman wandering the desert. I watched the water bead at the corners of her rose petal mouth, and my eyes tracked the crystal drops as they rolled off her chin and down her swan-like throat. Every time her throat bobbed and swallowed, I felt a little echo of it in my cock, and I had to avert my eyes unless I wanted to embarrass myself.
Oh, gracious, I must have been thirsty,
she said when she finished, and she dabbed the back of her wrist against her lips.
Thank you very much.
Not a problem,
Rat said, then refilled the cup for her. She took a slower sip this time, and then she held it up to my lips.
Would you like to try?
Sure, I said. and I let her tip some of the clean water into my mouth.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's amazing. This'll save my poor epic filter from most of the heavy lifting.
Raz, you too,
Emma said, and held the cup up to the alien spore girl for her to take a sip as well. Acrasis's eyes crossed as she looked down at the cup hovering in front of her heart-shaped lips. Then she extended her neck, and her jaw popped open like a strange baby bird. Emma giggled and then slowly poured a small stream into her mouth. The slime girl then snapped her mouth closed and pantomimed swallowing, even though she didn't have a stomach.
Mmm,
she said with a slow nod, and I smiled when I knew she was just following Emma's example on the appropriate human noises she should be making. So I reached out to give her hand an encouraging squeeze. She was trying so hard to really blend in, and I had to give her credit. Must be hard to try to portray even half of human nuance, especially since she only recently stopped referring to herself as a collective.
Garrett!
A rich and melodious transatlantic accent rang out from over the gardens, and the chattering ceased as everyone in this hodgepodge commune stopped what they were doing as a figure wound its neon yellow bouffant through the bottle towers.
Is that you I spy with my little eye? Where have you been?
Then the owner of the voice rounded the last vegetative partition and came into view in all of her buxom glory. And boy, was she divine. But no, really, like actually a carbon copy of John Waters' Divine, circa Pink Flamingos. Of course, the most impressive thing about Divine 2.0 was her neon yellow updo that looked like a cross between a beehive and Lady Godiva's hip-length tresses. She was a full-figured woman built like a brick shithouse. But the way she wore that skin-tight leopard print sheath dress was like she was America's Next Top Model or something. She took a few more steps toward me in her battered sequin platforms and looked down her broad Romanesque nose.
Look what the cat dragged in. Who are these precious plums?
She cocked her double-wide hip and arched an electric blue eyebrow.
Mama Bee, these guys want to check out the magpies,
Rat said.
They're down for some green hacks and reducing their carbon footprint, right, amigos?
Yes, miss. I wiped my sweaty hand off on my pants and extended it to the blonde H-bomb.
Butterscotch Haystacks is the name, but all my lost boys call me Mama Bee.
The beefy goddess extended her large, long-nailed hand palm down like a debutante at a ball. Pleasure to make your acquaintance, Miss Haystacks. I played along and kissed the top of her hand. I'm Dave, and these are my girlfriends, Emma and Raz.
Hello!
Emma bubbled and leaned over to the voluptuous older woman.
Oh, you look like a fabulous mother lion ready to protect her cubs. I think you and my other friend would get along. Can I feel your hair?
Well, aren't you just a pretty little cotton blossom?
Divine 2.0 smirked her pierced crimson lips as she added a little southern twang to her own accent. Then she shook her long, flaxen hair forward over one shoulder and let Emma run her fingers through it.
And Scoob, what did I tell you about offering our guests flowers before we know how they might react?
Was there more than just weed in there? I asked, and my eyes grew wide as they flashed to Emma. I knew some people laced pot with other shit like coke and PCP and other things to get faded, but that was playing with a certain brand of fire I had no desire to deal with, and if that was the case, we were getting out of here right fuckety now.
Don't worry, sugar,
Mama Bee soothed, as if she read my thoughts right off my face.
Only 100% organic around these corners, but our resident herbalist, Scoob, has managed to increase certain desirable side effects, which can be a little unpredictable based on the individual.
Okay, so what does that mean exactly? I asked, as I watched Emma brush some of Mama Bee's silky-looking tresses against her cheek.
It means your girl is going to be feeling all of the pleasurable sensations at full capacity for the next several hours. If I were you, I would envy her, not worry.
Those red Cheshire Cat lips uncurled into another smile as Emma sighed.
Oh, it's so soft,
she murmured as she continued to thread her fingers through Mama Bee's hair.
How can one grow a plant to express specific traits like you say?
A crisis piped up from where she had been a silent sentry so far.
It is my understanding that genetics are random.
We have a whole greenhouse for these little puppies, the punk named Scoob said, and for the first time the burnout had a somewhat alert expression on his stoner face.
It's actually a cool process, if you really want to know.
May I go with you to see them?
She asked and tilted her burgundy head.
Yeah, totally. They're back in the courtyard, he said.
I will be right back, Dave,
she said. Knock yourself out. I'll stay with Ems, I told her, and I watched her disappear back through the courtyard doors.
So, tell me, sugars, what can I and my magpies do for you?
Mama Bee said as she gestured around to her spiky-haired and patchwork leather-clad lost boys.
We are very interested in living off the grid, just like you folks do. And we are especially interested in how you manage to grow so many of these glorious fruits and vegetables, I said.
Someone mentioned strawberries!
Emma shouted, as if shouting was going out of style.
Dave must try strawberry!
Best strawberries left in the Great Lakes, free of government and corporate tampering. You can count on it. Ramon, Puck, where are you, my beauties?
Divine 2.0 clapped her clawed hands in true divine fashion. And from one of the towering walls of leafy greens, two mohawks popped out around either side, one blue and one cotton candy pink.
Come and explain your genius to our guests.
It would be better to show you,
the blue mohawk said and itched at the ring pierced through his deviated septum.
Pucky, is this the last wall of the strobs?
The girl with the pink mohawk nodded her cotton-candied crest.
Yep, this one is the last one that needs rotating, Rami.
She then pulled around a section of transportable chain-link fence on wheels that had at least 10 long columns of bottles zip-tied to its metal links. They were stacked upside down like little recycled Russian nesting dolls, one on top of the other, with the neck of one bottle buried into the dark soil of the one below it until they all formed a long tube of dirt. When I took a closer look, I could see a little window had been cut into the side of each bottle so that a little sprig of strawberry could hang out and catch the sun, as if each bottle had its own little flower box.
You wouldn't believe how much plastic we use and abuse on the daily as a species, the blue-haired guy named Ramon said. You won't believe how many people just throw this shit straight into the garbage. It's fucking plastic. It's gonna last forever. And don't even get me started about over-tilling or the Great Barrier Reef.
Relax, Ramon.
The pink-haired girl with the red plaid skirt and snake-bite studs in her lower lip rolled her eyes and then smiled.
You can tell our new friends about desertification and the plastic in the ocean later.
Oh, I know about that one,
Emma said, and then giggled through her pert nose as if that was funnier than Keyboard Cat with Jack Nicholson's Here's Johnny for a head. The lady punk blinked her glittered eyelids.
You're so fucking adorable,
she stated about Emma as if it was just a fact, like, hey, the sky is blue, or there's no post on Sundays. I could relate. Honestly, this maybe bi-curious hot punk girl that was into sustainable growing and knew about multisyllabic things like desertification was already a mild throwback to the type of girl I'd scope out whenever I would show up at these scenes. But to have her also be kinda attracted to my girlfriend sweetened the deal somewhat, and I wondered if I'd ever run into a version of Puck from my universe. I was suddenly snapped out of my musing when Emma gasped as Ramon brought over a basket hand-woven from what appeared to be repurposed plastic grocery bags. When he handed it over to Emma, I could see it was full of ripe ruby strawberries.
Oh, how gorgeous! Oh, you should be so proud of yourselves. Why, if my ancestors were half as clever, we wouldn't have died off, so...
Emma's voice petered out when she brought a golf ball-sized berry up to her beautiful mouth. Her breath caught, and as if she was a baby animal at the zoo, I felt everyone gathered around lean in slightly when she took a small and savoring bite.
Oh!
It was my turn for my breath to catch in my throat at the sound, and my mouth watered for reasons that had nothing to do with strawberries. When Emma then brought it up to my lips for me to try, I bit into it, but I didn't even register the tart taste of the berry's flesh, because I was imagining something much, much sweeter.
Isn't it to die for?
Emma asked with a dreamy smile, and then proceeded to start noshing on a second one with gusto.
Delicious, I murmured.
But then I just had to pull her in for a kiss, so I could taste the lingering juice on her lips.
Hot,
Puck stated again, as if she was casually commenting on the weather.
Also, the walls are movable, so if you need to bring any plants inside that won't last through a sudden cold snap, you won't be down a whole crop.
"What's up here?" I asked, and pointed to the topmost bottle that didn't have any of the dark soil in it. Instead, it was full of cloudy, dirty water.
"This is the funnel piece that allows the water to drip down through the whole column. Some of this water is the runoff that we collect at the bottom here."
Puck pointed to the collection of coffee cans mounted at the bottom of each bottle tower.
"And then we pour all of that nutrient-rich water back into the top with new water. But be sure to fill the funnel bottle at least a fifth of the way with sand. That way the sand will filter out any impurities if you're short on rainwater."
"Genius," I said, and my mind filed away all of this new information so we could implement this back at our homestead. It looked like a simple design, and I've always had a good photographic memory, so once we got some materials, we would be off to the races. "What do you do about—" My next thought was interrupted by Emma and her sudden case of strawberry hiccups. That in itself wasn't really earth-shaking. But the hole she accidentally zapped clean through the bottle tower fence in front of us was. Silence swept through the encampment as dirt and charred strawberry leaves rained down and some smoke sizzled from the melted plastic and chain-link fence as dozens of eyes glared at the two of us as if we were aliens. Butterscotch Haystack stepped toward us, and I pulled Emma slightly behind me so I could shield her.
"Something tells me there's more to your story, Sugars,"
she said, and then pulled out a sawed-off shotgun from some previously concealed location. She cocked it and took aim at my face by squinting her blue eyeshadowed eye.
"Now, talk."